This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. This podcast is brought to you by Becker's Healthcare and Intuitive. Intuitive is the world's leader in robotic-assisted surgery. This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. Thrilled today to be joined by Chief Technology Officer Lynn Gibson. Lynn's going to talk about what he does today, what works in technology, what doesn't, and give us some of his thoughts. Lynn, can you take a moment and introduce yourself?
Good morning, Scott. As you said, I'm the Chief Technology Officer of Christus, who has its corporate offices in Las Colinas in the Dallas-Fort Worth area of Texas. But we have facilities throughout Texas, Louisiana, New Mexico, and we also operate facilities in the country of Colombia, Chile, and also the country of Mexico. So I've got a little over 30 years in healthcare in a variety of roles, and I'm kind of split between operations, research, biomedical research, IT, consulting work, kind of a wide variety of experiences that I've had. But I didn't grow up in healthcare. I started actually working for a U.S. congressman and later who became attorney general before I got into healthcare.
Well, fantastic. And Christus is a huge system, one of the most successful nonprofit systems in the country. Great leadership, great faith-based leadership, bringing you back to technology. What does a chief technology officer do today, and how does that differ in layman's terms from a chief information officer? Tell us a little bit about the different roles and so forth, and then I want to talk to you about a number of questions about technology today.
Yeah, sure. You know, the CTO role or chief technology role is kind of a new aspect in healthcare. It's not been around near as long as the chief information officer. And so it tends to kind of vary from organization to organization and the focus of that organization. Since I'm at a provider based in really hospital and clinic ambulatory world, most of what my role in some similar people that are in similar roles do is more of an operational, what I would equivocate to being the chief operation officer of the IT department. We focus on the operations, development, installation of new technology. We're not the focus of the R&D development like you might find in a life science world.
A lot of what you do is making sure in a massive system that the trains run on time, and they run on time constantly, that people have the right technology, that you budget well for it so that you're not buying every single new thing that people want, but doing a regular process of refurbishing stuff, reinvigorating the technology and so forth. In the role of chief technology officer, what have you found, and what size staff are you working for, team you're working with, and what have you found to be surprisingly good technology over the years? What sort of has worked and even sort of surprised you on how well it works?
Well, to kind of back up to a couple of your questions, I have about 270 people in my span of what we do here out of a total staff of what is a little over 600. Christus is a little bit over $6.5 billion in revenue. And we have about 60 locations that we primarily support. So it's quite a sizable geographic area. And our staff, although it may seem large, is pretty stretched pretty thin many times because of that. So one of the things that we try to do, and one of the things that was part of the role of why I got into this, was to try to develop a methodology of making things more efficient that we could deliver and things more stable of an environment as well. And, you know, things are challenging on a good day about what works and doesn't work. Healthcare still has a large amount of technology that it's invested in that is 10 to 20 years old. And with technology changing as rapidly as it is these days, it's not uncommon to run into equipment that is operating in an environment that basically is no longer supportable. That's one of the bigger challenges I think most organizations have today. And you start talking about what works and doesn't work. You know, I struggle with some of the things that we have right now in the imaging world because it's still very much tied to older structured technology that is based in a local environment, yet they're adding more and more requirements for storage, bringing in higher scan rates, higher density of what they want to store. you add that to the composites of the legal requirements of maintaining that storage, it's very costly. And although I know it definitely brings value, because I've seen it firsthand back when I was in the medical research side of life, what that new technology is bringing and the value of it, the cost benefit of it is starting to be kind of, is it really bringing the value that we think it is to solve that one or two cases a year to have that higher resolution and the cost of bringing that there? I'm battling some of that right now because it is a cost issue.
It's not just buying that technology. It's whenever you buy technology, you're also having to worry about the technology and people to support the technology. So it's never something just in a vacuum. It's never only one thing typically. Is that a fair statement?
Oh, that's very fair. That's as you start looking at in an organization such as the one I'm at here at Krista's, where we're still in a mode of looking at acquiring other organizations, merging them in with us, and they bring different tool sets with them. So you may have a different EMR, you have a different imaging system, you have a different, now you have to adjust and adopt and decide how you want to maintain that information and how do you make it useful across the organization. Right now I'm supporting four different EMRs, which is very costly, but to convert to them is even more costly.
You're right, so you're better off continuing to support it. Well, you can, and you see this in a lot of big systems today. The goal is ultimately one EMR system or one system that the whole system is on through mergers and acquisitions, but people find that the cost of doing so and the stress on the system to actually make that change can be totally brutal, so you don't see that happen as quickly as you otherwise would.
Yeah, it's different if I was sitting at a 400-bed hospital and we wanted to change out a system, that's not near as difficult if you're looking at trying to change 60 different hospitals to one system. The time and effort and the people to do that, as you said, the resources are actually getting very thin about who has the skill set to be able to live in that type of world.
Well, that's right. And you also have a situation where the labor shortages in technology are acute. They were always running at a very low percentage, and now they're probably running at a negative percentage in terms of unemployment. And then I guess the next question I have for you, Lynn, is when you hear from the various different segments of the system, where's the pressure to spend right now? Where are people saying, you know, we need this, and it's a big cost item? Where's that kind of dialogue going on that causes someone who's running a budget some stress is trying to figure out, can we really do that now? Is it really necessary now, et cetera?
Well, you know, I've been in this a fair number of years now, and I've been on the operational side as well as the IT side, and the conversations really haven't changed much. When you go in and you're all battling for capital and you're fighting to get a capital item that is really nothing more than a replacement tool for something that is an overhead cost versus battling for a new item that's going to be revenue generating. When you work in a world that has like a 2% margin, 3% margin, you know, every dollar is a battle and a competition for how you spend that money.
And where is that? I mean, you have famously people that are in the tech world like Bill Gates that, you know, reportedly made his people go very, very slow on, you know, updating laptops, updating desktop computers and so forth for exactly that reason. He said it's not revenue generating and it's good enough. It'll be good enough for a few more years. So we don't need to change it. How much of that push and pull is there without you being sort of thought as the Grim Reaper for not wanting to replace and update technology?
Well, we've taken a hard, and that's where I have established my kingdom, Krista's, what a sort of a 5-year rolling plan to try to anticipate when the pressures are going to start to replace certain items of equipment, because everybody has a published end of life to whatever it might be, whether it's a network switch or, since you brought up Bill's theory, I look at operating systems that Microsoft puts out there. You know, it just doesn't seem that long ago that they announced Windows 7, and now they're already timing it out and saying we're not going to support it beyond now, as of January this year. You got to move to Windows 10. But Windows 10 is vastly much more complicated, and you have to look at all the downstream effects of changing that operating system. a lot of our biomedical equipment was built under Windows 7. It's not built under Windows 10. So you just can't automatically sweep in and make changes.
And the leadership that you have, compare working the leadership of a health system to working with a congressman. Give us some contrast in the understanding of the time frame and the issues that you have to work with.
When I first got into healthcare, and after about a year or two, I went to the CEO. I was in the room with the CEO of our healthcare system, which was a pretty large group. And he knew a little bit of my history. I said, I worked in Washington, and I've never worked in such a political environment until I came here. Healthcare has got certain dynamics in it that you have to be very alert to who are your leaders, who are your influencers. And you don't always have the distinction of knowing, like you do in Washington, political party methodology. So you have to be very attentive across the board. And when you get into the larger of the organizations, you have to worry about each hospital and each ambulatory clinic team and each lead within that to understand who you have to make sure you keep them abreast of what you're trying to do and you have their support. That's not much different than the way it is in Washington, except you generally know which side of the party that you're having to deal with more than the other. The difference really are somewhat similar in the fact that congressmen are independent entrepreneurs because that's how they've gotten elected. Physicians are trained to be independent entrepreneurs, to have and run their own practices and build their own practices. So you're still dealing with very strong personalities no matter which end of that you work with.
Right. And a lot of politics either way, a lot of keeping constituents happy either way, and so forth. And it must be fascinating. How long have you been at Christus for now?
I've been at Christus. I'm actually just about to start my ninth year.
Right. So Christus, in those 9 years, must be a very different organization than it was 9 years ago, too, although it's always been tremendously faith-based and compassion-based.
We're being a Catholic-based organization, it's obviously a big influence in everything that we do. But since I've been here, we've added the operations in Colombia and Chile. We've added probably 30% of the size of the growth domestically has occurred since I've been here. And we just announced last week that we're yet again acquiring another hospital that we hope to close in about another 45 days. So it's a very dynamic world that we're in.
And the chief technology officer, is it fair that the chief technology officer is like a lot of things in life that when trouble lurks or trouble happens, you know, something gets shut down, something doesn't work, that's a bad day for the chief technology officer. Like you hear more about the chief technology officer when things are going well. And just going as they should. The trains are running on time. Technology is being updated as it should be. Things are generally moving along in the right direction. It's kind of a magnificent role, but a quiet role. It doesn't get a lot of press. It's when something breaks down that the phone rings off the hook. It's almost like for a stockbroker, when the stock market goes down, the phone rings a lot. Yep. Is that a fair assessment of the CTO role in part?
From a provider-based side of that equation, I'd say it's absolutely true. My first couple of years here, we would routinely have daily outages that extended not in minutes, but hours. And that was one of the challenges that I was asked to solve. Now, we've been very successful about doing that. And we've really reduced those outages to be regionally local to some of our smaller applications. But it is in a world of what have you done for me lately? The short-term memory is incredible, because the demands are incredible.
And what is, when you look at the CTO, one could jokingly say that the most important thing to learn is how to say no to everybody that wants to buy and spend money. And that would be jokingly, because the reality is the most important thing to learn is how to say yes and how to figure out how to make things work, have the technology working, having it going and so forth. Which brings me to the real question. What are the two or three most important skills or things you have to do as a CTO?
Well, I like the way you kind of phrase that. If you routinely say no, your career as a CTO will be short-lived. Because although that sounds like the great way to protect the environment, it's also the shortest way out the door. you have to be creative enough to understand options and look at the options and be able to offer options. And my career path allowed me to learn a lot about healthcare from the operational side as well as the application side. If the CTO doesn't understand the application side and what different applications do and what they offer, they can't be a contributor. The days of being the director of servers and evolving to a CTO, which happened in several industries, you know, being a network guy and evolving up to the CTO job, that is really very limiting now. That's your only background.
Right, you're right. Today you're more of a manager in a ton of different ways than necessarily you have to know the technology, but you don't have to be a coder. You don't have to be a guy that could fix the network server. You've got to be a guy that understands the whole business, a guy or woman who understands the whole business, and you've got to be right. You said something fascinating. If you become good at saying no, and that's all you do, you're not helping people solve problems, then your career as a CTO is short-lived.
You're absolutely right. That's a big part of being a CTO, is being that person who, whether it's 2 o'clock in the morning on a major outage and you're sitting on the call, you're helping being a problem solver, just as you are if you're 9 o'clock in front of the executive committee of your organization and they say, we're looking at doing this, but we can't afford it. Well, here's another option. Have you thought about doing this? I mean, you're that thought person that's helping them process options.
And making them fulfill the business plan to the organizations and the charitable community plan to the organization. Mm-hmm. Fascinating. Lynn, one final question. If people want to learn more about what a CTO does or what you do, can they connect with you on LinkedIn or something like that? Or how do they learn more about you or about Krista's Health?
I definitely have a LinkedIn account that I routinely get numbers of requests to join in, and they can certainly look onto that. I've also have a number of things that I've written that you can go through the search or find both on a peer-reviewed article side as well as the industry journals. So there's a number of things out there. Krista's has its KristasHealth.org website that you can certainly learn a whole lot more about Krista's through that as well.
Well, fantastic. Lynn Gibson, what a pleasure to visit with you. Tremendously. I view these and love these. When I learn a lot personally, I learned a lot today from talking to you. And I greatly appreciate your time, Lynn. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for this time. I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you very much for joining us today. This podcast was brought to you by Becker's Healthcare and Intuitive. Intuitive is the world leader in robotic-assisted surgery.